Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Hi, and welcome to Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe. This week, I am here with my friend, Jessie Neelan, who I originally met 4 or 5 years ago now at the DVRT certification in NYC. Jessie was a personal trainer with a brand called Remodel Fitness and has evolved into this dynamite of a woman who I am very excited to have on the show. I'm going to talk a little bit about Jessie, then I'm just going to literally hand the floor over to her and let her talk, because what she has to say is super important to every woman out there. And I can't do any of this any justice, which is why it's great that we have women like her being vocal about it. So one of the things I resonated with when I opened Jessie's website was she has this one liner that says, imagine loving every inch of your body. And I love that, because how often do we look in the mirror and just go, oh, and sigh and roll our eyes, even if we don't say anything bad to ourselves? How often do we do that? And Jessie's aim in life is just to make everybody feel beautiful about their body, and I love that. A bit about Jessie. The words exactly on her website are, the short story is, I am a coach, teacher, speaker, and writer dedicated to helping women love their bodies. The long story is, I used to hate my body. So Jessie, I want to turn it over to you then. I want to welcome you to the show, and I want you to give me, please, give the listeners a little bit of a background and just tell us why you are where you are now, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I'm obviously really passionate about this topic. And, you know, the more people, especially in the fitness community, who are talking about it, I think the better, because it's really the front line of the conversation around your body starts in fitness. So it's interesting, because I think that I can look back and very clearly say that I had body image issues, that I was locked in a battle with my body for a really long time, for over a decade for sure. But I wouldn't have said at the time that I didn't like it really, or I mean, there were things, I had complaints, I had criticisms, I would, like, you know, chopped myself up mentally every time I looked in the mirror and I was like, if only this was a little different, and if I could just improve this thing. You know, I thought about it all the time. I was constantly monitoring my body mentally. But ultimately, I thought I looked pretty good. So, like, I can't really say that I hated how I looked. And I think I'm, you know, quote unquote, lucky in that I'm privileged that I was thin. You know, I sort of fit the ideal in a few ways, especially as I started getting into fitness. But it didn't make it any better. You know, I didn't feel any more peaceful just because I was thin or considered, you know, attractive as a woman. I just found other things to think about. And so the negativity that I felt towards my body was like, there was so much resentment that every little thing that I saw being imperfect or somehow being a problem or whatever, that I felt like it was my responsibility to fix it, because I owed that to the world somehow. That there was like a job that I had been born into, to be as beautiful or hot as possible for everybody else to look at. And so when I look back on it now, I can see that that is messed up, that is not at all the kind of relationship that I would want anybody to have with their bodies. But it's so, so common. And so as I started getting into it with other women, you know, I would help people as a trainer. I'd help them lose the weight. I'd help them get the abs or whatever. I'd help them look how they wanted to look. And yet it didn't really help them feel any better about their bodies. And so I just started to recognize, hey, this is a pattern. This is not just me. This is like, women believe that our job is to be appealing to the eye of other people rather than feeling ourselves from the inside and focusing on what we can do and what we feel and all that stuff. So when I talk about loving your body, I don't mean finally believing you look good enough. that kind of love is so conditional. It'd be like loving your children only when they were perfect, you know? It's not really love.
That's not okay. I'm joking.
So I don't know.
Yeah, don't judge. Anyway, sorry, carry on, Jesse. Yeah.
So because of that, I think that so much of the work I do is about shifting the perspective away from when I finally look good enough, I'll love myself, to loving yourself actually is a complete paradigm shift that has nothing to do with finally looking good enough, and everything to do with shifting your focus away from other people's experience of you back to your experience of you, what you can do, how you feel, what it's like to be inside of your body in the first place.
I look at like your journey from when I first met you and then to where you are now. And I can't help but think that you were under a lot of pressure from just the fitness world in general, because I sort of feel it slightly myself, to be and act a certain way. I think both of us are now like, fuck you, because we're not going to be that person. But is that true? Is that part of your story as well? Like, there was this expectation that Jessie's training these models, and so she has to therefore be like tiny and have abs and a cute bum, and otherwise she's not good enough as a trainer as well. Was it part of the pressure?
For sure. I mean, there's a unique body image pressure inside of the fitness industry. Like, there's certainly just your everyday body image pressures anyway. But inside of the fitness industry as a trainer, there's this idea that your body is your calling card, and that you're only, you know, as knowledgeable as how good you look. And I had clients say to me early on, you know, they'd look at other trainers and they'd be like, I'm choosing to work with you because you have the kind of body I want. I don't want to look like one of those girls, you know, and it'd be like a more muscly or like a CrossFit kind of body, or just someone who did fitness classes casually and really loved it and was high energy, but didn't, you know, but maybe carried a little bit of extra body fat. And they would judge those other trainers to me. And so the idea was supposed to be, I win, I'm successful, yay. But like, what it really did for me was reinforce this idea that my business depends on how lean I'm able to stay. My business depends on what I look like. Like, on a day that I don't look as inspiring, do I know any less? No. But that's how people perceive trainers, is like, you would only, you know, you would assume that they all want to look as good as possible, as lean as possible. And if they don't, then you go, they probably don't know what they're doing.
Exactly. And then, and I've come from a personal experience as well, just going through this hormonal shift. We have, most of the people who listen to this are now in their 40s and going through some hormonal shifts that are associated with menopause. My body's not acting the way it used to act anyway. So it doesn't matter what I do, that it my body's smarter than me. It knows what it needs to do to get me through this phase. So if I was to go around like judging about the way I looked every single day, I would never get out of bed. One of the lines that you say is, contrary to popular belief, loving your body has got nothing to do with how your body looks. And that's such an amazing way to like reframe things when you have those times of self-doubt. Like, I stood in front of the mirror the other day. This is probably TMI, but I don't care. And I'm doing the visual for Jessie now, because she'll appreciate this. I literally cupped hold of my breasts underneath and picked them up and shook them and weighed them. And actually, because I've never had boobs, and all of a sudden, like, these big mammaries have like come out of nowhere. They look like cow's udders, I have to say. I look like I'm about to feed a calf. But I was like, oh my God, they weigh a ton. And instead of being grossed out by it, which I think I may have done in the past, I'm just like, well, something's happening here. I've just got to get on with it. And I don't hate myself any less. I just double bra'd it that day. It was one of those like high nipple double bra days, and it was fine. And I don't think I could have done that maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So it took a lot of work for me to feel that comfortable. Yeah. So leading on from that, a couple of questions I've got like a million questions, but like, so how do we get to that place? What are some practical steps that women can do to just take that pressure off themselves? It's not just about how your body looks.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not about how your body looks, but it's certainly informed by a culture that is telling you it's about how your body looks, which is a really important thing to recognize.
Okay. I like that.
So often women come to me and they're like, I know I shouldn't care about this stuff. Like, I don't want to be the kind of person who cares about this stuff, but I can't stop thinking about how I look. And they're mad at themselves because they feel like, this doesn't align with my values. What the hell's wrong with me? But there's nothing wrong with you. Caring about how you look in a society that tells you, as a female especially, that your value is based on your looks is perfectly reasonable. So I think the first step is to start recognizing that we live in a stew of this kind of attitude, that you are promised happiness when you finally lose the weight, that there's this magical thinking that if your body is good enough, then you'll finally be happy. You'll finally find that partner. Everyone will treat you well. You'll belong. You'll be accepted and liked. And there is some, unfortunately, there is some truth to that, because we know that people like fat people, for example, they are discriminated against. They don't get jobs. They're perceived as lazy. We know that there's actual structural prejudice happening based on how we look. Women who are all dolled up, they get treated very differently than women who are, you know, dressed down or dressed in a more masculine or less like, you know, figure flattering kind of way. So we know that those things are true. And the truth is, as humans, we all want to be liked and accepted and respected, and we all want to belong. And we've been fed this massive lie that the way to belonging is to look a certain way. And we see it reflected and we feel it reflected. So beginning by forgiving yourself for caring in the first place, I think, is really important.
Okay.
And once you're able to acknowledge, I didn't do this to me, there's nothing vain or broken about me, I'm the result of this exact formula of a society, then you get to start staging, as I like to call it, like a one-person rebellion. Because that's all you can do. I'm an activist. I plan on fighting against the patriarchy and the weight stigma and all those things for as long as I live. But ultimately, like as far as personally healing your relationship with yourself and your body, we're probably not going to see the payoff socially in any kind of timeline that would actually help. So as far as having that relationship with yourself, I think you have to say, I choose to reject that message. I choose to unpack it, to talk about it, to put language to ways in which I have been oppressed by that message, to the lies and the waste of time that I have been given. You know, like all the many ways, for example, that I, when I was an early teenager, you know, I spent like a decade just trying to be more beautiful, probably more than a decade, probably like 15 years, obsessed with how to look better. So what didn't I learn in that time? You know, what skills do I not have? What hobbies did I never pick up because I was too busy with the hobby of trying to look good enough? So when you start to unpack that, you realize, well, I could do that for the rest of my life. It's not something you outgrow. Or I could start to reject it and unpack it and really challenge those ideas that in order to belong, in order to be accepted, or in order to be liked or have value, that I have to look a certain way, that that's my job as a woman. You have to reject that and then start looking at what has been internalized by you from this soup of horrible messages.
So start rewriting your own story then. Yeah, I like that. And I think an exercise that I've given some of my clients to do is to sort of write yourself your own love letter. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in like a soppy woo-woo way, because I'm just not soppy and woo-woo, but I do like the idea of you being able to start a sentence with things like, I appreciate you talking mm-hmm. to yourself because, or I'm proud of you because, and you've accomplished this because of. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's stepping outside of the value of like just how you look though, isn't it? And just appreciating the things that, that make you. I mean, I don't have the vocabulary that you do. I don't, because it's not something I'm an expert in. But one of the things I think that I recognize in your work is that you're just telling people that one, it's actually okay to be somewhat vain, because there's nothing wrong with wanting to be the best version of yourself. I mean, you're not saying to people, you know, let yourself go. It's like, be more than just your looks though. Like be proud of everything that your body is doing for you right now. I mean, you're physically able to do things, you're intelligent, you're beautiful in so many other ways. So I really like love that type of like feedback to the women. And I, like I say, I don't always have the vocabulary. One of the things I read the other day, which I really resonated with, is one of your Instagram posts. And of course I come from a fitness background, so that's where I'm talking from now, is that you will most likely never ever commit to a complex or advanced eating or lifting protocol again, because you now have different priorities. And what I read from that is you still care about your health and your wellness a lot. It's still a high priority for you, but now the result goals or the outcome goals are no longer what they used to be. Is that the way?
Yeah, I think I just, you know, when it was my career and it was my calling card and there was the pressure, plus, to be honest, it was fun. I really, really enjoyed pushing the limits of, like, you know, my training and all that stuff. So when that was the case, I just, everything sort of focused around it. And I was comfortable with that because the payoff was exactly worthy for me. But that meant that, like, I really had to focus on, you know, I was getting body work done constantly because of different aches and pains and things that would come up. You know, I was really focused on sleep. I took supplements to, like, you know, I couldn't get enough protein without a protein shake pretty much every day. You know, like, I was really a lot, they sound small, but there was a lot of different details in my life that made it possible. And that's what I'm like, I still want to lift. I'm not going to push myself to the edges again because I'm frankly, like, the thought of doing all that extra work is just,
it's exhausting.
Yeah. I have stuff to do. I want to write and, like, hang out with people, and my priorities are just different now. And I think so often people come to me and say, I want to look the way I looked back in XYZ period of time, you know, back in college or back when I was single or back when, you know, everything in my life was going really well and I didn't have a baby and it was easy. But, like, why? Why would you ever want to go back and try to look like how your life reflected at the time when your life looks like this now? And our bodies reflect our lives and our habits and our decisions and our values. So the post for me was very much about just embracing the fact that your body will change throughout your life, in part because of hormones and stuff, but also in part because sometimes something's really important to you and other times it's not. And that's okay.
And yeah, generally just aging and going through different phases. And I think that that's really a great message because I really appreciate that now, almost approaching 50, thinking to myself, I'm what is considered midlife, mid-age, middle age now. It's a term that seems really hard for me to accept when I still feel like I'm 20-year-old. I probably still am only 20-year-old up there. But there, you know, I don't want to be the person I was when I was 20. I'm so much more experienced and wise. I'm like an old sage, I think, now. Whereas, and I know that when I'm 80, I probably won't want to be the person I am when I'm 50. And I'm wondering if why we find that so hard as a female culture, because I don't see it in the masculine culture. I'm around men all the time and I don't see them having the hang-ups that we do. Why is it so hard for us to go into every new decade and instead of saying this is, I'm going to embrace this new phase of my life, I'm going to learn from this, I'm going to, like, just take my 50s, like, by the big hairy bollocks or big hairy vagina, whatever it is, and just run with it. Why is that so difficult for us? Is that a media, a cultural thing? Or
it is a cultural thing. I mean, it's reinforced everywhere, but the idea is that women's value and power comes from beauty, and beauty is directly tied to youth. So that means that according to this, we peak in our 20s. We're at maximum value when we're completely dumb and insecure, you know? Like, men get to have maximum value. They get to increase in value as they age because they get, you know, more confident, more competent, more skilled, more wise. But for women, because we're not valued for our skills or our wisdom, we're valued for our beauty, then it has this feeling like, well, then all you can do after your 20s is just fight to look as young as possible in the hopes that you'll maintain some power. When really, you're so right. I mean, like, good riddance to my 20s. No, thank you. Like, that was a terrible time. I mean, especially, like, when people talk about they'll say, oh, I wish I could fit into this such and such from high school. And I'm like, I don't want to have anything to do with that time of my life. But the stronger we get, the smarter we get, the more confident we get as we get older is very undervalued because it's offset by not being as quote unquote beautiful because youth is a part of that. And it's bullshit, but it's the message of that.
So what can we do to change that then? I mean, I feel like people like you and I can change that because we have a voice, right? We've created a platform for ourselves. What can women do in general that don't feel, often middle age brings with it some a sense of, like, invisibility or insignificance. And it's, we need that to stop, right? So that's huge for me. For me, I want women to start to feel self-worth and confidence again, but also now they need to find their voice. So what can they do? How can they change the conversation?
Such a big question.
Easily. Oh, I only ask big questions. Change the world in one answer, Jesse.
So what I'll say is that what I offer people as like a methodology for working through body image issues applies to, like, you know, it applies to weight, it applies to age, it applies to all the different ways that we're told that our appearance is, you know, it should look a certain way, and if it doesn't, you're failing. And that way is to name the body story, whatever that is, because the body story is like, I'm too old and nobody will want it or something like that, you know? Or it might be, I'm so fat, nobody wants to date me. Or maybe it's not about, you know, anybody being attracted to you, but it's like, I'm so fat, no one will accept me, or people will reject me as even just a friend, right? So that's the body story. That's the story that is culturally validated, that everyone will go, yeah, that makes sense. That's real. That's true. And it is true. I mean, you know, it's, you can find proof for it for sure, but it's not like objectively the truest thing that's really going on. And I always say it's like a red herring for the thing that's really going on. It's just a distraction. Honestly, whatever's really going on is much worse. But the technique I offer people is to pull back the veil of that red herring and look at the thing that hurts much worse. Because once you start doing that, you're able to have really honest conversations. Because you could spend the rest of your life going, I'm too old, or I'm too fat, or whatever, but never get anywhere, never actually be able to reclaim your power, because you can't, you're in a disempowered state with that story. But if you pull back the veil and go, well, what does it mean to be too fat in a world that believes that thinness makes me more valuable? Once you start unpacking that and getting really honest, or like, what does it mean to me that I feel invisible now as I'm getting older? What does it mean that my value up until this point has been based on how many people look at me? And is that true for men? And is that how I want it to be, where my value comes from? So as you start unpacking it, most people will land at a much more truthful and much more painful story that sounds something like, I believe I don't have value, or I believe that what I have to say and my wisdom isn't as important as how I look. And that's where it's like, it's been internalized, it's been made your own. And those are the meanest messages. I mean, that's really where we have to do the work. So pulling back the veil, like looking at the body story and then digging underneath it, you'll start to unpack the kinds of issues that that pain is like very convenient. It's very convenient to be hurt by getting older, or by not having a body type that fits the society's ideal. It's easy to be angry at yourself for being imperfect physically. It's a lot more painful to be angry because you feel like you don't have anything to offer the world, or like you've let yourself down, or never lived up to your potential, or you have a hard time connecting with people. Like, those are the things that sit underneath. So that's it's a big answer to a big question, because of course this could go in so many different directions, but that's what I have people do, is they name the body story, whatever it is, and then they pull it back and see what's sitting underneath. What is this story protecting you from knowing or feeling?
And that's where the work starts.
Exactly. And then it'll take you in whatever direction. I mean, it's different. Yep.
That's great. And Jesse, you do actually offer coaching on all of this, right? I mean, this is what your job is now, right? So can you talk a little bit about, because I think that people may want to seek you out who haven't heard of you, or I don't know why they wouldn't have heard of you, of course, but I know you do a lot of workshops that I think that, like, the in-person, like listening to you speak thing, maybe as one of those most positive steps that they could take, right? Like, just for finding their path again. Yeah. So you can tell us about your website, where you are, and about your speaking engagements, what they consist of, because I think I'd like to get people to come and hear you.
So I do workshops. As I travel around the country, I do them by myself, so it's just my teaching. And then in New York City, I have a dance therapist friend that I combine for a weekend-long workshop with. So we do my teachings on body image, and then she puts it into practice in like an experiential way, and we go back and forth. It's my favorite workshop. And I do those sort of intermittently. There's no like grand plan for them, but Those I find they're really fun because I get to teach. Basically, what I just said to you is the beginning of like a long process, and I get to teach the process. But we also have the time to dig into each person's story and see the both the diversity, because everyone goes a different direction as far as what they discover and what really connects us. So all these women get to hear the same echoes of feeling not good enough over and over and over again from women that they have a completely different kind of body or a completely different kind of complaint. So they're very healing workshops because of the feeling of a bunch of women sitting around and unpacking this stuff in a very honest way. Because most of the time women go, I hate my thighs, and someone else goes, yeah, me too. And that's the end of it. They stay stuck in that superficial body story. But when someone goes, I feel like my thighs represent how I'm too big and I'm too needy and I'm too emotional and I push people away. And the other person goes, oh my God, yeah, me too. Like, now we're really talking about something that can actually be healed. And it's very healing just to hear it, you know? So that's why I love the workshops. The coaching is all private. So it's one-on-one. I do have an online program that's 12 weeks called Authentic Body Confidence that, again, it teaches this and it guides you through all of it. Private coaching is like just me and one other person on a phone or Skype call. So we get to dive really deeply into their story, unpack what's really going on. And it's so amazing to me that, like, we never know. You know, the person will say, I just want to feel confident getting dressed in the morning. That's the goal, right? It's so simple. I just don't want to think about what I eat all the time. So simple. And yet when we really get down to it, it's always about deep, painful things. Like I grew up in a house in which I was praised for this and shamed for that. And what I learned is that in order to make people like me, I have to do this performance every day. And then it's like, okay, so how can you stop doing that performance a little bit and face the fear and the discomfort that comes up with that? And how can you actually act on your authentic impulses a little bit and face the fear and discomfort? But over time, it's transformational. So that's what a lot of my work is, helping people face the fears that sit underneath that body story and really start living a life that, even though it's uncomfortable, actually reflects like their biggest, most expansive, confident selves. And that's when you start looking in the mirror and going, well, I might not love what I see. I might not think that what I see is perfect, but I love this person living here. And I love that this body is this person's home. And it shifts the way you look at your body completely.
It's amazing. Jesse, I think the work you're doing is fantastic. And I just love that you're trying to get people to be authentic and real. And we just don't see enough of that. So keep shouting. I love it. Keep inspiring women. We've come to the end of our time. I really wanted you to do most of the talking today, so that's great. If anybody wants to check Jesse out, her website is jessienealand.com, and I will make sure people have that. Thank you for coming on the show, Jesse.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, everyone, and tune in next week for our next guest. Take care for now.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com, or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.